We're into November now, and the holiday shopping season is kicking into high gear. In the weeks to come, billions of tons of cargo will be flown around the world. The entire global air freight industry can be traced back to one man, a daring pilot who once lived just 20 miles from Lansing's airport. Philip Parmalee grew up in St. John's. He learned to fly from Orville Wright himself, and on November 7, 1910, Parmalee carried a bundle of silk cloth in an hour-long flight whose details have been largely forgotten. Current State's Kevin Lavery spoke with Pete and Alice Murphy. They're a retired couple from St. John's who share a passion for aviation. Kevin asked Pete Murphy how they first heard about Philip Parmalee, who went by the nickname Skyman.
I think we first learned of Parmalee at the Capital City Airport from the historical marker that's there that explains what his role was in early aviation.
Now, were you living here in St. John's when you first discovered who he was?
No, at that time we were living in East Lansing, and it wasn't really till we moved here that it registered, oh my gosh, this is where that guy Parmalee was from, the one known as Skyman.
Alice, what do you know about this barnstormer, this daredevil of a bygone era, Phil Parmalee?
Well, Phil Parmalee was born in Matherton, Michigan, which is a small rural town in the very northwestern corner of Clinton County. And he spent his formative years there. We think he traveled in other places with his family before moving back to St. John's in about 1903, after his mother passed away. He and his father moved back here to St. John's, and they both worked as mechanics in the same company here in St. John's building motors. He was very mechanically inclined. He loved engines and had a real facility at fixing them and building them. And he lived here for at least a few years with his father. And then he moved to Mansalona, Michigan, where he worked for another engine company. And there he was discovered by a representative from Buick. And he was hired because of his talents, and he became part of their demonstration team. He drove their cars throughout the South and the East on long tours, showing that the Buick was very sturdy and could handle the roads or non-existent roads of the time and actually get from point A to point B successfully. And while he was on one of these tours, he visited the Wrights Flying School in Montgomery, Alabama in the winter of 1909, and he was bitten by the flying bug. And so he took the flying course in Dayton from the Wright brothers. Orville taught the students. And that would be the summer of 1910. And as soon as he finished his instructions, he was hired by them as a demonstration pilot and started demonstration flying in September of 1910. And that's why he was chosen to take a commercial package from Dayton to Columbus, which he became very famous for.
So, Pete, take me back to that day in Dayton, Ohio. It's November 7th, 1910, 105 years ago. And this was sort of a promotional stunt for a local company in Ohio.
Yes, indeed. Max Morehouse, who was owner-operator of this major department store in Columbus, asked if they could fly him a cargo shipment of French silk, which at the time was not easy to get, in short order anyway. The morning of the actual flight, everyone gathered around the Wright Flyer B model in Dayton, and it was a cold day, and Parmalee suited up in motorcycle gear, motorcycle mask, and three layers of sweaters and so on, and pants, and hopped aboard, and off he went. He flew up to around 2,000 feet, where it was freezing cold, it was shivering, and he kept turning the plane slightly to the south, trying to get some of the warming rays of the sun. But of course, he had to go east to Columbus from Dayton. So 66 minutes later, he arrived in Columbus, having followed railroad lines, roads, and so on. His only navigation system being a road map. He had no compass even.
Wow, and we should mention, too, that on that flight, he had his map fastened in some way to the skids of the plane, so he had to look down all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So he was looking down, looking for roadways, looking for railroad tracks, and this is from about 2,000 feet altitude. So this was seat of the pants flying to the extreme. And keep in mind, there's no cockpit, no windshield. He's out in the open in this rickety airplane only 7 years after the first flight at Kitty Hawk. He lands in Columbus and the city goes crazy. The sirens are blaring, horns tooting, factories, you know, blowing all their big lunch hour horns and so on. And thousands of people show up and he lands and he's an instant hero. And it was another 20 or so years before the shipment of cargo by aircraft really became common. So he was definitely the earliest and was very famous for it. I would just add to this that keep in mind, this was 17 years before Lindbergh. We think of Lindbergh as the ultimate pioneer pilot. Well, Parmley had 17 years on him and actually did many, many more things than Lindbergh did in terms of breaking records and doing demonstrations and so on. And this flight to date to Columbus, delivering the silk, was just one tiny part of his career.
We're talking with Pete and Alice Murphy, aviation enthusiasts and collectors of memorabilia. We're talking about Philip Parmley, who lived more than 100 years ago here in St. John's, Michigan, a pioneering aviator in his day, even in the era before Charles Lindbergh. Alice, I wonder if you ever think of Philip Parmley every time you see a UPS plane or a FedEx plane at the airport.
Not always, but when I do think of Parmley, it certainly comes back. I mean, he was the very first commercial pilot in the world. Very few people at the time ever thought of airplanes as anything but just entertainment. A few people knew the potential, and certainly those early flyers were very dangerous and very rickety, but they were the first steps to the airplanes that came along later and became very commercially feasible to move the mail, move packages, move people. All of this within 15 or 20 years of that first flight was happening around the United States, all because of those early steps of pilots like Parmley.
The military was interested in Phil Parmley as well. He was the first pilot ever to drop a bomb from a plane, which proved itself time and again, perhaps not so much aerial bombing, but certainly dogfighting in World War I, which was less than a decade after he did his stunt, his maneuver.
That's very true. The Wright brothers initially tried to sell their airplane just through the military because that's where they thought the money would come from. And they kind of had to be convinced that these demonstration flights around the country at air shows would be a good way to sell their airplanes to individuals and to also sell their flying service of training pilots. Parmley worked with both the civilians and with the military. He flew along the border with Mexico and proved that the airplane could be used as great spotters for people like Pancho Villa to keep them out of our country. You're right, he dropped bombs and showed that that was feasible. He also took pictures from airplanes that show you could reconnaissance that way. I think he was the first to transmit telegraph messages from an airplane to the ground. He did many of these things to prove that it was feasible and that these were all ways to sell an airplane.
But who's ever heard of the guy? And I guess that's the point, right?
Very true. Well, our country tends to be kind of like that. Unless we have some long-term enduring way to keep a person's name in the public eye, they tend to be forgotten, which is too bad, because he truly was more famous, I think, than, or at least as famous as Lindbergh in his day when he performed his feats in 1910.
Philip Parmley died at the tender age of 25. Pete, what happened to him?
Parmley died in 1912. It was in June. He was at an air show in North Yakima, and the weather was not good, and his mechanic who was with him pleaded with him not to go up, but Parmley said he was not going to disappoint the spectators, some of whom had driven long distances to be there, so he went up, and it was windy, gusty, and he was flying this relatively new model airplane that was not the right flyer, and got caught in a gust and came down in an apple orchard and died immediately. And Turpin, his partner, who had been in Seattle, immediately quit flying himself, got to North Yakima, and personally escorted Parmalee's body back to St. John's. But the point is, he was a brave guy. He was not about to disappoint people who wanted to see him fly, and he died as a result of that.
Just a testament to the American spirit that people continued in spite of the dangers, in spite of those who lost their lives, and the pilots all knew, buddies who died, they kept on because they just loved it. The speed, the danger, they lived for it. And others took their place and continued on, eventually got safer, and we have what we have today because of them.
Pete and Alice Murphy live in St. John's, Michigan, and a few years ago they co-wrote an article in Michigan History Magazine on the life of Philip Parmalee, the first commercial air pilot. Alice, thanks so much for sharing the story of the life of Philip Parmalee.
Well, thank you for coming and interviewing us. It's been delightful.
Pete, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's been great to have you here.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.